No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us your questions at BBSRADIO1. Well, happy Memorial Day, everybody. We have a very special guest today, and we're going to bring her on in a second, and she's going to tell us what we can do to support the families that support our troops, and we can't wait to talk to her. But first, I want to talk about a few things that have happened in D.C. This week, Senator Carper of Delaware introduced companion legislation for our bill in the House to make the people of the District of Columbia give them equal representation through statehood. So we thank you, Senator Carper. It's got 18 co-sponsors, and we want to give a shout out to them. We have Senator Baldwin of California, Booker of New Jersey, Brown of Ohio, Cardin of Maryland, Coons of Delaware, Cortez Mastro, also of California, Franken of Minnesota, Gillibrand, New York, Hassan, New Hampshire, Kane, Virginia, Markey, Massachusetts, McCaskill, good old Claire McCaskill from Missouri, Patty Murray from Washington, Schatz from Hawaii, he's brand new, and supports us, Schumer, Chuck Schumer from New York, our old friend Chris Van Hollen, and of course Elizabeth Warren. So thanks to all those people for supporting our legislation. Yes.
You've been at this for quite some time now. Do you think that this is a different momentum that you're establishing with what just happened? Does it feel to you?
Always hope for the best, but you know, it's a civil rights issue, so we got to keep pushing, right? I mean, I just don't know. I say all the time, Maria, I wish that Rosa Parks was around so I could ask her, you know, before you gave up your seat on the bus, did you realize the next day what was going to happen, what the aftermath of giving that refusal would be? So I think we're going to reach a seminal moment where things change, and I don't know if this is it or not, but we hope it is.
And what is the argument for those co-sponsors? Do they have anything that you can start replicating in terms of a slogan or a soundbite or what got them on board? What was the convincing argument for them? Do you have any kind of information?
Well, these are guys that, of the 18 I read, the only new ones are Schatz, because he's brand new, and I think that's and Van Hollen, because he's brand new. The other 16 have been on the bill before, so you know, I think they accept our argument that this is essential to democracy. Taxation without representation is wrong, but we'll get back to that in a minute. Let's bring on Jennifer Hurwitz of Blue Star Families, because this weekend is Memorial Weekend, and I know that my co-host Maria Sanchez and I both support our military. We think these people are heroes and sheroes, and I think personally that the families that support our military just don't get enough recognition. So that's why I'm excited to have Jennifer on the show today. Jennifer, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Well, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. And I feel honored to be on the show when it's such an exciting time.
Yeah, so it is an exciting time.
I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk about Blue Star Families and to let your listeners know some of the work that we are able to do.
Yeah,
Jennifer,
well, tell us.
The genesis of Blue Star Families, what need was expressed and how did you fill it?
Well, actually, Blue Star Families is a nonprofit organization that began because really we were wanting a way to connect families, military families, and veteran families with their local communities. So we try to build communities that support military families. And the way that we do this is by connecting research and data to programs and solutions. So some of our programs and solutions that we've developed are career tools for military spouses. We have local community events for families. We provide some programs for caregiver support. And we have lots of great programs, and I can talk to you about those. But Blue Star Family started in 2009. And over the past years, we've been able to engage tens of thousands of volunteers through our local chapters that we have in military communities. And we have been able to serve more than 1.5 million family members of military family members through those efforts. And we strongly believe that military families should be able to serve and simultaneously build their healthy families and families that thrive. That's our main mission.
You know, and as I said when I started out, I don't think military families get enough credit, but I don't think that most people understand the problems that military families have. And, you know, when you just said the thing about employment, I thought about my brother was an Air Force pilot. He lived in Georgia, Alabama, Colorado, California, England. He was stationed all over the globe, and his family went with him to a lot of these duty stations. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people realize that. You know, I remember my sister-in-law would have a job in one town, and she'd have it for a year or two. Then she'd have to move to another town. Right. And I don't think people understand the problems that military families have. We focus on the soldiers, which of course is appropriate, but also we should focus on the family. So I think you guys are doing a great, great service to these people and a great service to America. Everybody in a military family serves. The children serve, the spouse serves, they all serve.
And you've done so much in such little time.
Yeah.
You're not even 10 years old.
You're right. We've had great momentum. And of course, a large part of that is due to the current environment, and we're now at 15 plus years of ongoing war. And so, yes, we have had some really great momentum. And I just wanted to say that, one of the things we do at Blue Star Families is we really try to bring awareness to our local communities and also in our nation's capital. And one of the ways that we do that is by having the annual Military Family Lifestyle Survey. Which is a survey that's been conducted by Blue Star Families since 2009 when we first started. And the reason that we started this comprehensive survey was because every time we would go to policymakers and, try to discuss the issues that were impacting our military families, their first question was, okay, but where is the data to support what you're trying to tell us? Because they really wanted to see the numbers behind it. And so that was why we decided to create a survey, one that we could use as a yearly snapshot of the military family experience. And while no military family, is the same as another, I think that there are some areas where we all struggle. So, for example, childcare and military spouse employment, and then, of course, the current operational tempo and when our spouses deploy, how that impacts our children. So the survey is the largest of its kind, and it's been used by political influencers at the White House, at Congress, and then also within the Department of Defense. And they use our data to try to understand the current state of the military community, and then also those needs and challenges that we experience as military families. And I think survey... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we keep on talking over each other. I'm sorry, but I have so many questions. How do you get people in the survey? Do you solicit them, or do they plug into you somehow, like get on the internet, or do you go out, or do you do a random sample like they would in, let's say, a polling survey?
Sure. Well, how we do that is, first of all, let me just tell you a little bit about how it's designed.
Yes.
Our family has a research and policy team, and I'm one of the members of the research and policy team, and then we have a couple other military spouses who are also members, and there's a team also. We employ analysts to work alongside us, and we're all either military affiliated in some way or military spouses, and so I think that that allows us to really look at the questions that we're asking and see if they're going to resonate with the military family community. And then it also, once we look get the actual results, we're able to say, yeah, this, you know, looks right. We can see that this is actually happening, or, oh, that's a little bit, you know, different. So we work with Syracuse University's Institute for Veterans and Military Families. And so they do the data analysis, the program that we use, and then we work together as a team to look at the results. But basically what we do is when we field the survey, it fields for a little bit over a month from mid-April to mid-May. And so we just finished fielding the 2017 survey. And we ask military families and veteran families to take our survey. We talk to different publications like the Military Times. We talk to, of course, we use our Facebook page. And then a lot of it is just word of mouth. We have our local chapters that the volunteers in those chapters really work hard to spread the word about the survey and get people to take it. And our survey is so comprehensive that it is quite long. And so... basically, you have to really want to take our survey in order to put forth the time that, you know, it requires. But people have seen that lawmakers are beginning to listen to what we're saying. And I think we're making progress in a lot of the areas where we are seeing needs. So that's encouraging.
So do you ask somebody to take it annually, or is it a one-shot deal?
We do field the survey annually, so this was the eighth time that we fielded the survey, and this year we received over 7,800 responses.
So
we do get quite a lot of responses. Like I said, it's the largest of its kind, and so I think that's why we have been able to garner the attention of the Department of Defense, of Congress, and, of course, the White House. So I think that they're seeing what we do as a research and policy team in conjunction with the Institute for Veterans and Military Families. And I think that they're seeing that this is, you know, truthful data that we're collecting. Analyze that data and make sure that it really does speak to what the military families are experiencing.
So is there anything in the 8 years that you've been doing this, Jennifer, from the first survey to this survey, has there been one or two things that you've seen a big change in terms of attitudes or needs or what military families want over the 8 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to preface this that I've only been working on the survey for the 2016 and 2017. So I just basically came on. But I was a chapter director prior to that, so I was familiar with the survey. But what I see has been the biggest change, and I think a lot of this has to do with awareness and just talking and having the conversation about it is that people are recognizing that military spouse employment is important. And I think that this is basically due to the generation that is coming up. I think that military spouses, the younger military spouses, and some of us who have been at this for 19 years, are starting to say, okay, you know, we have reinvented ourselves so many times, and it's really time that, you know, our needs are listened to in terms of, you know, you take us from one place and we're only there for a year, and then, you know, the next duty station is two and a half years. And so they say that the average military family moving cycle is every 3 to 4 years, but it really depends on what your husband or spouse, I should say, spouse's career field is and the upward projection of that. And so every military family sort of has a different experience with that. But me personally, I've had 10 moves in the 19 years that we've been together. So right. My daughter's been in 4 elementary schools. She, you know, and she's only a 5th grader. So that gives you some idea of some of the challenges that, you know, military families are experiencing. But I think the military spouse employment would be the one that has really changed and has garnered a lot more attention from people.
Well, that's great. You know, I you mentioned your daughter being in the 5th grade. I remember my brother, you know, these are the kind of problems that I don't think people realize. My brother was stationed at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and his kids were in Colorado public schools, which were great. And then he got stationed at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, and he had to put his kids in private schools because the Alabama public schools just weren't up to where the Colorado public schools were. So when he transferred his kids from the Colorado public schools to the Alabama public schools, they were so far ahead of the kids that you know, that they had to find a school to put the kids in. And these are the kind of typical problems I think that military families have that most people don't recognize. But
Jennifer, Michael, love to find out how you created this partnership with Syracuse University, because they've got a special program that deals with veterans, and I would imagine that they don't just go into business with somebody. In other words, they're already established too. You were a new one, if you will, and that alliance seems like that's been very impactful.
Yes, I think that definitely. The name recognition, and that the Institute for Veterans and Military Families really does provide some great research about veterans and their transition process and how they are reintegrating into their communities. So I definitely think that the contract that we have with them to do this survey is beneficial and has you know, we have worked well as a team to provide this type of analysis and really look hard at this data to see what it's showing us.
Because that association talked about respectful, and as you mentioned, name recognition too, but boy, does that say volumes about what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. Well, and the team there is really, really great to work with.
Jennifer, can you explain to me, I found this a little troubling that I looked at your website and I saw a thing that said food insecurity. Is there food insecurity for military families? What's that about?
Well, yes, actually, this is where it gets a little bit tricky because, of course, you have the enlisted population and then the officer population, which you know, are two different sets of pay, I guess, pay and salary. And so one of the things that our survey did show was that we found that 79% of active duty family respondents felt that the pay and compensation was not keeping up with civilian compensation. And especially on the enlisted side, if you have, so how the military does it is if you are a single, you're either paid the single rate or you're paid the dependent rate. And so it doesn't matter how many dependents you have. So let's say we have a young family who maybe, you know, they're 25 and they already have four children. Then you could see that there would be some food insecurity, especially in certain areas. Even though we are able to receive certain benefits for such as the housing benefit and then we call it BAS. I'm not sure what that acronym stands for, to be honest. I know I learned it at one time and I can't remember what it means. But basically, we do get some extra benefits. But some military families are not able to support their families, and so there is some food insecurity. So Blue Star Families also works together with some philanthropic actors, and so we try to help military families whenever we can when we see these needs and point different organizations in the right direction if they're looking to help military families who have those needs.
Yeah, that's really crazy. You know, I get a deduction. Well, I don't anymore because my kids have grown. But, you know, I used to get a deduction for each kid on my tax return. I didn't get I took the single deduction or the family deduction. I got a deduction depending on how many children I had. And that seems to make sense to me. And I don't know why the military doesn't do it the same way. But this is the kind of thing your group can change, I think. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Maria.
Yeah. That's okay. I was just going to say, you mentioned housing. Do they provide for that too, based on the number of members in the household? Or is it just a flat fee regardless?
I don't know that I'm going to be able to answer that question entirely accurately because housing has become privatized in a lot of communities. And so, for example, if you're stationed over in Hawaii, you might be with any number of different, you may have as options any number of privatized housing communities. So when you go to the base housing office, they will provide you with different options. And so I'm just saying for my family of three, since we just have one child, typically we are eligible for a three-bedroom house wherever we go. Now, that is if housing is available. And then if housing is not available, you can go on a waiting list, and then you usually have to rent, in the community. Or, obviously, you would have the option to buy if you think that you're going to be there long enough. It just depends on what your preference is and what you have the funds to be able to do, of course.
Wow.
Well, it's such a complicated thing. And like I said, when we started the show, you know, I don't think families get enough credit because everybody serves. You know, the kids have to do without one of their parents very often. I watched my sister-in-law move from community to community to community. And, you know, I think everybody in America should understand that not only those that serve are heroes and patriots, but their families are patriots too. Let me tell you that I know this community. I'm involved here in Washington, and it's a shame because in Washington, we don't treat our veterans as well as we should in Washington, D.C. They should be treated the best here that they're treated anywhere, and that's not the case. A third of our homeless people in Washington, for example, are veterans. But, you know, everybody serves in the family. Everybody makes sacrifices. And so it's important to support families as much. You're doing the person that serves, you're supporting him or her by supporting their family. Tell me, you told me briefly, Jennifer, in conversation we had about how you do things in the community to get the community, you know, special benefits and other things that you interface with the community to help the families. Tell us about some of those.
Sure. So we have lots of different programs. The first I'll talk about might be of interest to some of your listeners, because I'm assuming yep. some of your listeners, or maybe the majority of your listeners, are civilians. And so I don't want your listeners to think, well, how does this apply to me, since I'm not a military, I'm not affiliated with mm-hmm. the military. And so we have a program called Blue Star Neighbors. And we created the Blue Star Neighbors program because we saw that when our military men and women know that their families have the support of caring neighbors, that then they will have the peace of mind to be able to focus on the work that they do. And so by being a neighbor to the military families, then you're also a part of the community of people who are helping our nation. And so we would like to invite all of your listeners who are interested to join our network at Blue Star Families so that they can stay informed about the issues that we've discussed. And all they have to do is go to bluestarfam.org/neighbors, and then you can find suggestions about how you can get involved, and also different suggestions about how you can simply support military families within your community. So we have some great information on our website, and we do encourage anyone who would like to be more involved in this area to check out what we have on our website. And then we also – go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Jennifer. We want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. we also have what we call Blue Star Museums, and we have Blue Star Parks and Blue Star Theaters. And so these programs we partner with the National Endowment for the Arts, and we ask museums from all over the country and even out to Hawaii and Alaska to participate by opening their doors for free to military families. And we do this from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Our volunteer chapter directors also plan special events at the museums, and sometimes they offer special tours or art activities for families, and families can just have a lot of fun. And of course, it's PCS season, and if you're not familiar with that acronym, that means permanent change of station. But all you really need to know is it means moving. And so when families are moving, sometimes, you know, they have boxes all over their house, and so getting out to a park or a theater or a museum for free is a welcome opportunity for these families. And so we have a lot of great programs that we can offer to our military families through that. And again, if you check out our website, you'll be able to find more information about each one of those.
Well, and you know, I know, again, from my brother's experience, that some communities are very supportive. I know Maria probably knows about in San Diego, they're yes. probably very supportive. You know, yes. when Paul was in Colorado Springs, they were very supportive. When he was at Nellis in Nevada, the people, I remember he used to tell me that he could play golf at the casinos at a reduced rate. You know, most of the casino mm-hmm. hotels have these big, beautiful golf courses in Las Vegas. And he took up playing golf, which he hadn't played in years. And it was a great a stress reliever for him, and a chance to go out with his buddies and unwind a little bit. So the community is yes. so important to these people and the families. And I think, you know, there's probably a lot of things, and you probably find out this through your surveys, that we can do to make our community stronger and better able to support veteran families. And I think everybody should be involved in that. So give us the website one more time.
It's bluestarfam.org, and that's the general website. And then you can find out about all of our different programs. And if you want to hear more about the survey or just find out some more things about what our CEO is doing, Kathy Ross Duque is a member of the Bipartisan Policy Center, and she's co-chairing some really fantastic work there with a task force. So we have lots of exciting things that we're trying to get accomplished, and like I said before, I think that we are making progress in a lot of these areas, and so that's exciting for military families.
Jennifer, before you go, I know obviously volunteers are at the backbone of your organization, but you have a couple of somewhat creative, innovative ways that people can donate financially, especially like the Amazon Smiles program or a donation per your phone bill. Do you want to give details about both of those?
Oh, you're asking me a question that I'm not honestly prepared for, but I know
about Amazon Smiles. I'm sorry, the Amazon Smiles I had awareness of because I've been involved with the philanthropic 501c3s most of my life, but I thought because Blue Star Families also does that, if anybody makes a purchase through Amazon, you can register a charity. And there's a percentage of the proceeds that go over, and it's not costing anybody anything to do that. So that's a real easy way to give. And then the other one is through the phone bill. It says that you can give every month, even as little as $5 a month. It'll just come on your phone bill.
Oh, okay. Well, you are telling me something that I did not know about that. So that is wonderful. Well, but like I said, I've only been working with Blue Star Families since April as a part-time employee. Before that, I was contracting with them. So, yes, you're teaching me some new things. And when I was a chapter director, I was over in the United Kingdom. So I'm not sure. I would assume those programs applied, but maybe I missed that somewhere. So thank you.
Well, that's why we have Maria. She
is well informed.
Yes,
I come at things knowing that money is the bottom line, right? It's a business at the end of the day, and you got to be able to support yourself and to justify it. And if people can give in ways that are simple and easy, and you're not going to notice it, then the more that do that, many make a lot.
Yes, that is definitely true.
We see that sort of thing. And do you reach out? Do you have people that actually do that for Blue Star Families that find new ways to get funding for you guys? Maria just talked about those two things, the phone bill and the thing with Amazon. But I notice there's hardly a store that I go into anymore where they don't give me the option to contribute a dollar or two as I check out, from Costco to my drugstore to, it asks you, do you want to give $2 to Children's Hospital or you want to give a dollar? And it's so easy, especially when you're at Costco and you've just paid $450 for groceries, to add a few bucks at that point really doesn't seem like much. Are there people that work on that for your organization?
Yes, we do have a team that works with fundraising, and we've had some great partnerships, and then they also apply for grants. And so with the survey, that has really generated some support for Blue Star Families, because when we're able to say, that we're conducting this comprehensive survey and it's the largest of its kind and it's used by all these key policymakers, then of course that generates interest. And so we are able to receive some grants and then partner with various different philanthropic actors. So we've had some great received some funds from the Walmart Foundation, and there's so many to list, I'm not going to be able to name them all, but I'm just thinking of some of the different spouse programs that we have. And I know that Salesforce provided some training for us for the spouse support program, and then Walmart Foundation was part of that, I believe. And so we have been able to create interest in these areas because of what we do on the survey.
And that's how you can drill down to your demographics and do exactly what the grant is looking for, which is awesome, because there you go again, win, win, win.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Maria. Every time there's a win for a military family, there's a win for all of us.
Yeah,
and
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's so great on Memorial Day, as far as I'm concerned, to talk about not only the soldiers that make a difference in America, but also the people that support them. Today in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you're in Washington or not, Jennifer. I don't know exactly where you're stationed these days, but in Washington, there are tens of thousands of guys that have come in on their Harley Davidsons. I mention this because I drive a Harley, and this is the first time in 10 years I haven't ridden to the wall with these guys because I have a cast on my leg. So they won't let my wife won't let me on the Harley as much as I want to get out there. But you know, there are thousands of these guys that come every year to see.
There's
say
got
thank
to be
you.
Girls there too, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry, girls. Oh my God, I'm such a sexist fool. You know, that's why I ride a Harley. But no, there are more and more women on Harleys. You know.
Yeah, I had a Street Glide. My last one was a Street Glide. So
no,
yeah.
Get out of here. You did?
Yeah.
I like you even more now. I've always wanted a Street Glide. The Street Glide's cooler, though. I got to go out and get a new Harley I can have a cooler Harley than Maria.
Than Maria. But, now, and I've been to Sturgis twice, my friend.
Oh, my God, the Holy Land. But anyway, you know, they come every year to say thank you, and we should all say thank you.
Do you know, also, too, something that you haven't mentioned about Blue Star Families is your chapters. What are they, brick and mortar, or are they virtual chapters, or how does that work?
So our volunteers, we do most of our work virtually. We do have some different communities. One is San Diego and also Jacksonville, and then we have other chapters that are listed on our website. But within these communities, what we're trying to develop is support through our programs and resources. And so, for example, in Jacksonville, we're offering a lot of what we call Networks Live to try to build some momentum in the spouse employment area. And also in San Diego, I believe we're doing some of that work also. And then I think also in San Antonio, and of course in the greater Metro DC area, we have a lot of programs that we offer up there as well. But yes, the local chapters are run by volunteers, and so we have a volunteer program with two leaders, and they split the work so that they can make sure that the chapter directors are getting what they need from them so that they can go out and make a difference in their local communities. So, yes, by all means, our volunteers are really the backbone, and they do so much for us in terms of just getting our message out there and helping to bring awareness to what we're able to do.
Well, Jennifer, before we let you go, is there anything that you want to add that we haven't asked you? Anything else you want to?
Well, the only other thing that I'd like to say is that Kathy Ross Duquet, our CEO at Blue Star Families, has done some, like I mentioned before, some really wonderful work with the Bipartisan Policy Center. They recently, in March, published a report called Building a Fast Force, and quickly it just provides a look at the military personnel system. And if you'd like to read a short synopsis of why we're doing this work, they just published, and they is Kathy Ross Duquet, and then a retired general by the name of James Jones, and he was a former commandant of the Marine Corps. And they published an op-ed just on Friday, I believe it was, in U.S. News on usnews.com. It's called Serving Those Who Serve. And so if you have, you know, a few minutes in your Memorial Day weekend, if you want to take some time to read that article called Serving Those Who Serve, I think that it will help to explain some of the challenges that we're facing and why we as a nation should be concerned about those challenges. And taking a look at the military's personnel system and making sure that we can reform it so that it suits military service members and also their families in this current security environment that we're finding ourselves in.
Well, that's great, and I hope people will do that. One last time, Jennifer, what's your website so people can go and plug in?
Yes, please. It is bluestarfam.org. And thank you so much for having me on the show today. It was such a pleasure to speak with you and with Maria, and I just really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, do you know, I'd like to add, Jennifer, and sorry, Michael, because you take that survey in a certain window, I understand now it's closed for the rest of this year, and you're going to release the report in November, I believe, of this year.
Yes.
But there's a place where if somebody's listening to the program and would like to take the survey next year, you can register your information, and then Blue Star Families will send you a follow-up and let you know when
right.
the survey period is open, so you don't have to
yes.
remember to remember.
Yes, exactly. And I think we also notify you when the results are released so that you'll be able to go and access the 2017 comprehensive report and the executive summary. So, yes, that is a wonderful way to keep in touch with us. And they can do that at bluestarfam.org/survey. So it's the same website. It's just the survey portion of the website. So if they would like to join our network and find out more information, there's all sorts of places on our website where we'll have join our network, and then they'll be able to enter their information. And we don't take that much information. It's, I think, usually just your name and maybe a zip code and an email, I think. And we do not spam, so we make sure that we keep communication to just what we need to let them know.
Perfect. Perfect.
Well, thanks again for being on, Jennifer. Our thanks go out to you. Please extend that to your husband the next time you see him, and your daughter. Thanks to all of you for serving. And we hope you'll come back in the future
yes.
and share more information with us, because, you know, I think that, that supporting military families, that's really the way that you can support our military the best, I think, is to support their families. So thanks again.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Continued success. Good luck with everything. You are an inspiration.
Thank you so much. Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So now we're going to talk about a few other things. Thanks again to Jennifer. But first of all, let's talk about the fact that I'm really pissed to find out that, that Maria drives a cooler Harley than I do. How come I never knew this?
And it's ride. You ride a Harley. You don't drive a Harley.
No, I know. Oh, my God. I'm getting so old. You do. You ride a Harley. You don't drive it. Jeez, I'm.
You know what? It's funny, Michael. I grew up, I wanted a mini bike so badly when I was a young girl, and my dad finally agreed that he would match the funds to buy one with me. So
wow.
I saved, and I got a mini bike, and we lived across the street from a 10-acre field. So I had a lot of terrain that I could go on. And then my pops was a motorcycle rider, and so he taught me how to ride motorcycles when I was in high school. And the two of us would go out on the open roads. This was in New Mexico where my mom's family was. So, you know, there was hardly any traffic or anything. So fast forward to, you know, getting an education and a career and then a family. And it just wasn't seemed like it was, I couldn't take the time. It's just like golf. I didn't have the time to golf. But fast forward to the children are grown, the marriage is done, and I'm looking for pursuits that are singular in nature that are healthy. And I thought, well, what about a motorcycle? And no one could say no to me because I was done with, you know, so I went to that motorcycle safety weekend. And when you finish that, at least here in California, if you pass their test, the DMV accepts it. And all you have to do is go in and take the written. And that's what I did. And so that's when I got my first bike was, geez, it's over 10 years ago now. And that same year that I got my Harley, that time I got an 1800, is the first time I went to Sturgis. So, and I broadcast my radio program live from Sturgis that whole week that is madness there.
Right. Oh, my God.
Rides.
I've always wanted to do that.
Oh, Michael, you must. It's got to be one of your items on your short list. In Mount Rushmore is a ride, and Devil's Tower is a ride, and there's these historic rides that are, the scenery is just gorgeous, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
well, we'll have to meet there and do a show.
G. Gordon Liddy broadcasts from there every now and then during this mad week known as Sturgis. It's the world's largest motorcycle rally. When I was there the two times, the last time I was there was 4.5 years ago, there were over 500,000 bikes.
Right. It is.
And the town of Sturgis has 6,000 residents.
Yeah, it's amazing. And my former co-host, Kathleen, knows a guy that owns part of a bar in Sturgis. So we've always talked about it. But my story is the same as yours. You know, when I was 16, a little different, I was an orphan, so I couldn't drive a car because I couldn't get car insurance. It was just crazy. Nobody wanted to insure a 16-year-old boy on his own. I mean, the premiums were out of this world. So I started driving motorcycles, and I drove them as a means of transportation, they're really a harsh means of transportation in a place like Washington, D.C. in the wintertime. You know, I used to put on a wetsuit and all this stuff, and I had a fairing and all sorts of stuff. But then 30 years went by and I didn't have a bike. I had like 6 motorcycles in a row, and 30 years went by, and one day I was the same way. I just said, you know what? It was the coldest day in February, and I went on eBay and I bought a Sportster, a 1200 Sportster that had like 2,000 miles on it. Somebody had it for one season. So I bought that, and I still have it, and I ride it when I can, but didn't get to do it today. One thing I want to talk about real quickly, Maria, I don't know if we can do a series of shows about this. I really would like to figure out a way to do it, is the thing that upsets me most these days is that it seems to me that America is not coming together. All I hear is the word resistance. You know, I hear it from the Trump people. I hear it from the Hillary people. And when I think about it, I just don't know where that's going to get us. Where is it going to get us if we can't come together? Here in Washington, you know, I live in a liberal cocoon. We're the most liberal Democratic Party. A city in America, like 70% of the voters in D.C. are registered Democrats. But all I hear is resist Trump, resist Trump, resist Trump. I don't hear anybody talking about the 45% of America that thinks this man is doing a good job. And that really is what we have to come to grips with, I think, is that about half of America one half of America disagrees with the other half of America, and how do we get that together?
Well, and the question is depressing even in the asking of it, because November has come and gone, and yet it's almost like the Civil War is still alive. You know, I don't know what it is. Is it a resistance to change? I know people are upset, but you're right. There are others that voted for him and are sitting on the sidelines waiting for some of those things to occur that he said he was going to do. And I don't even know how to answer it, Michael, because it scares me, the answer.
Well, you know, the thing is, one of the things that I find most upsetting and it bothers me that we're not looking at these things is there was one survey that showed that 20% of the people that voted for Donald Trump thought that he wasn't qualified. Now, I hear people saying, isn't that horrible that they would vote for a man that they didn't think was qualified? Well, yes, it is horrible, but I don't think that people are looking at what the real problem is, that they felt so desperate that they said, you know, even though I think this man doesn't have the qualifications for the job, I'm going to vote for him anyway because I'm so upset with what's going on in Washington, D.C., that I'm willing to take a chance. You know, and I don't think we're looking at that.
The disenfranchisement of mostly, as they said, the Rust Belt, right? That they weren't being heard. They weren't being recognized. They felt overlooked. But you would think that the Democrats could tap into that, too, because those people, that's a large swath of America that felt that they were not being heard. So that means that they want to be listened to. So why aren't we listening then?
Well, and they used to be Democrats. That's another thing that Democrats have to own up to, you know, is that these people, working class people, used to be Democrats. They're gone. They've left the party. And we're not asking ourselves why they've left the party. And we should be asking ourselves that question. And we should be trying to address this. So if you're out there listening tonight and you've got some idea on how we can bring people together, I'm going to try to work with Maria over the next several months and see if we can put together a few shows where we might be able to bring people together to talk about this subject, because I don't hear anybody talking this. All I hear, and I listen to all news stations, Fox, CNN, and NBC, and all I hear on all of them is we're doing the right thing, or we're not doing the right thing, or we're standing up and we're resisting. But I don't hear anybody saying we're coming together, we're talking about compromise, and we're starting to see the effects of it. You're going to see the effects of it over the next several weeks as they fight about the budget and they fight about health care. You know, we need some coming together, America. And you know what? I go out. I know this is really might sound simple-minded, but I went out today with my wife shopping, and we were in Home Depot, and we ran into a half a dozen people that we didn't know, and we talked, and we helped each other, and America has more in common. There's more that should bring us together than separate us, and I don't know how we get to that, but I sure as hell want to find it.
Well, and you know what, Michael, you're right about that, and about, we've said that about one another, that we have a courteous, respectful conversation from different points of view at times, and yet nobody is being impolite or profane or judging or derogatory or sarcastic. It's in the light of information. And if we can do that, then other people can do that.
Well,
by example, right?
Right. But I want America to keep an eye on you, because now that you know you have a cooler Harley than I do, you might start talking down to me. So let's watch that. No, you're absolutely right, Maria. And you know what? We do. You and I have a lot of different views, but I have great respect for you even more now that I know you're a Harley gal. But it's true. And before we leave tonight, I just want to give a shout out to the family. This was the most horrible thing that happened to me this week. And I don't know if you heard about it in California, but there was a young man named Richard Collins III, who was a student at Bowie State University, which is a historically black college. And he was on the campus of the University of Maryland celebrating with some of his friends. He's African-American, a white student from the University of Maryland, which is my alma mater, walked up on the sidewalk and told him to move. And he said no. And the guy pulled out a knife, stabbed him in the chest and killed him.
You're kidding.
No. And it's being listed as a hate crime. This guy belonged to some white supremacist organizations, evidently on the internet or whatever. But the most horrible thing to have happen, first of all, he had just been given the rank of first lieutenant in the United States Army because he was a ROTC guy at school. He was about to receive his bachelor's degree, which would have happened on Thursday, I think, if he hadn't been killed. So my heart goes out to him and his family. I support HBCUs through the Thurgood Marshall Foundation that I work with, and I'm also an alumni of the University of Maryland, so it really kills me to see this happen, especially to a guy who had just become a soldier and wanted to serve his country. So my heart goes out to those people.
That's a terrible story.
So Richard Collins, and you know, and I think it gets back to what we talked to originally about separating, you know, being so separated that we need to bring people together. So we'll see you next week. We're going to leave you with a song from the Dixie Chicks called Traveling Soldier, which is just a sweet song about a girl who loses a boy that she barely knows, but she cares about because he's a soldier. And I want everybody to think today on Memorial Day, not about all those people, not only about all those men and women who have served our country bravely, but also their families. So we'll see you next week. Thanks, Maria, for being the coolest girl on radio, on the internet. And we'll see y'all next week.
Have a great week, everybody, and happy Memorial Day as well. Official kickoff to summer.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus in his army green. Sat down in a booth in a cafe there, gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile, and he said, would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low. She said, I'm off in an hour and I know where we can go. So they went down and they sat on the pier. He said, I bet you got a boyfriend, but I don't care. I got no one.
In the capital of this nation, give the people their right to vote.